Hello and welcome to episode 16 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about point salad games. What makes a game a salad? What do we like or dislike about them? And what are some of our favourites? We'll talk about all of that, but first let's go off topic, starting with some news, announcements, and feedback. Oh, and before we start, I almost read the Spencer's line that's written in the show notes that's grayed out. I just thought I'd like to share that with our listeners.
So yeah, that's our first announcement. Spencer is not on this particular episode. He's doing some work in the suburbs.
He's putting up Christmas decorations. I think he's back now, putting them up.
So he's decorating the building outside.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So he'll be recording from a body cast next week.
Yep. So if this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. If you listen to our intro in the last show, you'll understand why there's a grayed out Spencer line in the intro. Let's see. But first, our biggest announcement, we're running a contest through December 18th. There's several games that we're giving away. We're giving away Seafall. We're giving away Avalon. We're giving away The Duke. We're giving away
Pandemic.
Pandemic, signed by all of us, because, you know, we're really important like that.
Wow. So cool.
Really generous.
We are.
Well, Chris is really generous. Yeah. These are all Chris's games.
This is a cleaning out my unopened game library, essentially. Mm-hmm. We're going to give out a little crocheted critter from Kitty. Mm-hmm. You have an Etsy page. Do you still have your Etsy page?
No.
Oh. Well, you had an Etsy page for a while.
I did for a while.
So you're cleaning out your crocheted critter collection. Yeah.
The backlog that never got sold on Etsy.
Yep. And I'm going to be adding some random little games, too, that I've gotten from conventions over the past couple years and stuff. So this is random stuff that nobody's heard of, and I don't even know what it's going to be, but I know I have a few unopened things.
Surprise stocking fillers. Yep. I like it.
Yep. Also, we were getting a number of entries from librarians. So there's a number of games we have that... Well, I have that are duplicates of games that have been opened or like previously played copies. Mm. So the winner, if they're interested in such games like that, I can certainly put those in the box too. Until the box is full. So we have a box. It only goes so big. So the details of our contest. You must email us by December 18th. If you don't email us, it doesn't matter how many times you share, tweet, retweet, review. The email is what is going to trigger the entry. So you have to email us, even if it's just, hey, I want to enter your contest. That's fine. I have replying back to everybody who's emailed me and saying, you're entered in the contest. So if you haven't got an email back, then it means I didn't receive it for some reason. There was a brief moment where the contest entry on our Tabletop Game Talk webpage had G-A-M-I-L or something that I switched the M and the A. It's been fixed. So if you clicked on that and didn't notice, just let everyone know. Otherwise, our next announcement is we now have a Twitter handle. It's Tabletop Game TLK. So our Tabletop Game Talk is 16 characters. Twitter only allows 15. So it's Tabletop Game Talk without the A at the end. My Twitter handle will still be updated continuously. And if you follow me or retweet me, that's fine too. Basically, I use my Twitter handle for just this, mm-hmm. which is Game Master Chris. But Tabletop Game Talk will have kind of a more specific to the podcast. I may post some other things, some things I like. I'm going to start doing some role-playing blog entries on our website, so I'll put those on there as well. We don't talk a lot about role-playing games on the show, not to the detail that I'll be posting, making blog posts about. So, but we'll see. To make it easier to review us, because iTunes does not make it easy, we have a new link that you can go to. So tabletopgametalk.com/review. Will take you to the iTunes entry and the web page. You then, and this is, if you do some research into this, there's no simple way to get you to the review page. You then have to click on View in iTunes, which then you would think if you subscribe to the podcast, you could just review it there. No. You then have to click Search in iTunes and search for Tabletop Game Talk. Then click into Tabletop Game Talk and click onto the reviews page, where you will find a link saying review.
Really? So there's no way to like have a link to that specific place, just like on our website or something?
Nope. It existed. They got rid of it about 8 months, a year ago. They removed the ability to get a direct link. So at present, there's no way to get a direct link to the review. If anyone listening knows of a way to get a review,
a direct link.
10 entries to the contest or let something. Let me know. Like,
you will get something, I promise. So anyway, reviews really do help, and we've got a couple great reviews. Well, I'm not going to read all of the reviews. I don't want to set that precedent, but there's a few of them that are kind of nice, so I'm pulling those out.
Sure.
And finally, we're recording a day earlier. Not that anyone's going to notice, because we're still going to drop it at the same time. But I'm going to London next week, so next week I will be... Well, different time zone. Not going to have a chance to play a lot of games. It's a work trip, so it sounds fun going to London. Josh is trying to hook me up with something, free tickets to someplace, but he's failing on me.
Well, my contacts in the theater industry are all inexplicably out of town at the same time you're there. So,
coincidence?
Out of luck.
I think not. So yeah, so those are the announcements. Do you guys have anything additional? This blank stares.
Not off the top of my head, no.
All right, awesome. Well, let's get to some of our feedback. We've actually quite a bit. Kitty has a theory that it has to do with giving away free stuff.
I know, weird, right?
But I like some of these. So we'll kind of go around on these ones. We have an iTunes review from DaCassies. DaCassies. I'm not.
DaCassies?
DaCassies. If you've entered our contest, please let me know that this is you, because I don't know how to relate this to someone. But I thought the review was really nice. It's, love the chemistry between you three. Just started listening a month ago. Helps picking out a game in a large group or large game store if I have a sense of what games are about. Thanks, guys. You're welcome.
Yeah.
You know, one of our favorite things is obviously to talk about games. And we're going to try to do more, you know, bringing like three or four games to the forefront in each episode and throughout the episode so that people have a better idea of what we're talking about. Mm. We'll still throw out a bunch of other titles out there of things we played and liked, but maybe getting into a little bit more detail and more games.
I like it. Mm-hmm. And that's really sweet. You know, I think we have a good chemistry. She's right.
Yep. Kitty, do you want to do the next one?
Sure. We got an email from Andy Simmons. Longtime listener, first time emailer. I really enjoying the show, but already costing me a ton of money. I just bought Mechs vs. Minions after your description, and Pyramid Arcade is probably going to be purchased soon. Please talk more about awesome games I have to buy that don't cost $100.
This one's actually going to inspire an entire show topic. It'll probably be in January, but I think the topic will be something along the lines of great low-cost games.
Mm-hmm.
So an upper limit of maybe $30 on those. Josh, why don't you take the next one?
Sure. It's Kate from Union Vale Middle School. She says, I would love to have a set of the games you have reviewed for our library. We have added a creator corner this year, and my next step is adding games to our chess sets. Please enter me in your giveaway.
So this is one of the, obviously, giveaway emails. Most of them were just kind of quick, hey, I want to enter your contest, say this. Mm-hmm. This one I thought was cool, though, because this was one of the first librarian emails I got.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, that is a completely different kind of type of game as well. What games work well in school libraries? Because there's things to consider there. You know,
right.
You want to have something that's relatively easy to enter. Maybe the time frame is small if people are trying to play at lunch or something.
Right.
You know, you don't want to pull out a Twilight Imperium and the setup alone. Games where the pieces don't necessarily get lost easily, or there's not a lot of fiddly bits.
Right.
So another show topic. Again, it's probably sometime early January, mid-January.
I like it.
Good games for school libraries.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for the idea. I'll do the next one. This one's from Susie Harris. She says, I'm a huge fan of your podcast and love strategic board games. I enjoy playing board games and listening to other strategies. Ever since my mom got depressed, board games are one of the few things that gets her out of bed and spending time with me. I would love to win one of these games so I could give it to her for Christmas. Thanks for reading this and considering me. This gift would make mine and my mom's day. So this makes me now have a, aww, hope she wins.
Yeah. super sweet.
Yeah. And this is like, you know, we do this for fun. But the fact that, you know, there are people that are touched by games in different ways, can sometimes we can all forget that, right?
Mm-hmm. Games can mean a lot to some people.
Yeah. We play to, you know, trash talk each other and win. And right. But there's a lot of good reasons, like learnings, you know, talk about school libraries and stuff. Mm-hmm. Especially people who are, you know, more depressed or maybe like disabled in some way, like not able to go out and be as mobile as they might like to be.
Sure.
Games are kind of a way of like bringing a group together and, you know, mm-hmm. having everyone have fun.
Yeah.
So, all right, Josh, you've read his last two, so you got to get this one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Our resident fan, Andrew from Gaia Games, has messaged again saying, hello, Chris, Josh, Kitty, and potentially Spencer.
Yeah, he called that one. So Spencer is, like we said, is decorating in the building right now. So
good. Yeah, good spot. I wanted to throw a good holiday family newbie game into the mix that wasn't mentioned on the holiday gift guide episode. It's called Snake Oil. If you haven't played it, it plays similar to Apples to Apples, but it has a lot more creativity and social interaction involved in the gameplay. So each player gets a turn as a customer. They draw a card to see what type or theme customer they are, and they have to pick their favorite product. The other players are the salesperson or inventor of each product. They each have six cards that are all one-word things and pick two cards to make up a product. They each gets 30-plus seconds to sell their product. 30 minimum, only the customer can cut them off after that. It's a really fun game, especially for creative and imaginative people. I bought and played it with the family last Christmas, and we had an absolute blast, despite having a mix of players, some of which have not played any board game or card game in years. You're almost weekly writer and potential biggest fan.
We have a biggest fan. Keep writing at you. And I have not played Snake Oil. Apples to Apples, I don't actually know if people know Cards Against Humanity or Apple to Apples more. Mm. They're essentially the same game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cards Against Humanity is the adult version of Apples to Apples, which is in no relation to the company or to the designer of Apples to Apples.
Mm-hmm.
Snake Oil I have heard of, and the description of it sounds like I would actually enjoy this and have mm-hmm. a lot of fun with it. It sounds like there's a lot more strategy where it's not just like, okay, pick the best card that's going to make the...
Yeah, because they give from what Andrew's saying here, they give the customers like a kind of specific goal. You have to meet their expectations. It's not just, you know, what do you think is the funniest?
Yep.
It's a little bit more
strategy. You've got to use your own spiel, right? To kind of win people over as opposed to just putting two components together.
Yeah, I could see like, and Snake Oil is a family-friendly game. Mm. But I could certainly see, you know, just like Code Names went with an adult version. Mm-hmm. I could certainly see a black box version of Snake Oil,
who make Snake Oil, you need to get on that if you're listening.
Quiet. This is Andrew. We're designing the game.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So. No one will ever know now.
We'll have to pick up a new name. But I do agree. Snake Oil is a great one. It's a good party game. This would make a good game for a school library.
Right.
It's just a deck of cards. Well, two kinds of decks of cards, mm-hmm. but easily separated, easily taken out and put together. So, and the creative aspect of it can't be understated. Right. It's really, especially for kids, it's good to be able to like think off the top of your head, start putting connections together and stuff. Improv skills are useful in every aspect of life.
Yeah.
So never underestimate that. And you don't have to be a professional improv artist to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So
that's great. Yeah. I really think I'm actually going to get a copy of this for the Christmas time.
Yep. Yeah. I haven't ordered it yet. But I'm going to.
Yeah.
So
speaking of ordering things,
Let's see. I got a couple new games this week. Hero Realms, which we'll talk about in a little bit because that's our game of today. Mm-hmm. I got Escape Room, which is kind of, if you've heard of any like real life escape rooms, this is escape room in a box. There mm-hmm. are four different escape rooms in the box. As the nature of the game is, you basically can play each one once and then you've either moved components, destroyed components. Obviously, you can't play the same one over. But you can't really pass it on either. But it was a relatively inexpensive game. I want to say it was like somewhere in the $30 range, which isn't too bad.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're saying that you couldn't, if you played it with a group of your friends and I wasn't there, you couldn't pass it to me and I could play that.
Right, box. Because the pieces would be already like open. The
like the reveals are already made.
Yeah. I've heard that the first room can be replayed. You can repackage it, but the second, third, and fourth are kind of play once things.
And so the idea of an escape room, they're like these interactive sort of theater immersive type things that you go to with a group of your friends, and there's a bunch of puzzles to solve to escape the room that you've been trapped in. And there might be a theme. It might be, I don't know, some war situation or sci-fi or history. I don't know. Am I right?
Zombie-ish ones.
Yep. I did one in Chicago. It was like escaping from a train car, and the train car was like, it had a bomb on it, and you were hurtling towards the center of the city, and you had to disarm the bomb and get out of the car before the hour was up.
Right.
So they're almost always like timed at an hour, and these ones are no different. This really, like, back in the 80s, we used to do like Clue dinner party type things. Yeah. I was too young to actually participate in it.
Oh, I did a few of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're still around.
Yeah, they're great.
So this is similar to that, where you get a group of people, it plays 3 to 5 people, and you all can get together, and like for 1 hour, you set an actual clock, and you're all working together to try to solve it.
It's like a co-op puzzle game.
It's a co-op puzzle game. Exactly like that.
Right. And that's cool. I mean, I'm looking forward. I feel like this is an episode topic in here as well.
I think we should play a couple of these.
Yeah.
And then, we should, because this escape rooms are just really cool in general, you know, and how do you create them? You know, how does that come together?
Maybe we'll have to go to an actual escape room as a group and then play the game and then compare the experiences.
Yeah. I like it.
I think we should do that.
Let's do it. Let's see. I have a couple games in the mail. The Arkham Horror card game, it's a co-op game. If you buy one box, you can play 1 to 2 players. If you buy 2 boxes, you can play 3 to 4 players. This one I was kind of hesitant on, and then I heard a review, and I've only ever heard good things about it so far. It's a living card game, so what's in the box is, you know, the first few missions or adventures or whatever. But I believe this is Fantasy Flight, so they usually release every month something new for their living card games. So I'm going to pick this one up, give it a shot. Speaking of show topics, solo games, I want to kind of do a show topic on. I'm always going back and forth on it. Like, is it worth playing solo? Is that depressing?
I've heard you describe it as like, oh, why would you, like, it's just solitaire, basically.
Yeah.
You've described every solo game as solitaire, but there's got to be more to it. There's got to be some good ones out there.
Yeah. So, even Hero Realms, which we played, and we'll talk about, it has a solo game, and I played that a couple times.
Right.
And for me, it was a great way to learn to play the game so that I could teach it to you really quickly. But would I play it again? I don't know.
Right.
Like, what's the replayability of a solo game? So, again, that's a whole topic by itself.
Right.
So. Another game I got was Insider. I don't know a lot about this game, besides I heard people speaking very highly of it, and they said it's kind of like Spyfall, 20 Questions, and Social Deduction. And I said, must own.
Right. That does sound fun.
Yep. So we'll see. I think it has something to do, it's either Corporate Insider or Spy Insider or something, but it's a social deduction where you're asking each other questions to try to figure out, you know, who's the bad guy or who's whatever. We'll give you more information as soon as we have it.
Yeah.
So some people, they like talking about game and hearing about new games. So that's what this whole section is about.
Yeah.
Kitty's looking at me. It's like, you're still
talking.
This is
the part where you lose me. I'm falling asleep right here.
I just need to get you guys to, you know, buy more games, which is never going to happen.
Well, I'm considering getting Letter Tycoon for Gloria.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a Scrabble-esque where you're having to make words from letters, but there's a lot of kind of strategy extra cards that will do special things with certain letters and things like that. So if you happen to be the kind of person that isn't great at that kind of Scrabble game, but you are really good at strategy, then you can play with the awesome Scrabble people like Gloria is.
So it's kind of like an equalizer.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping anyway. I will buy this game and report back to you after Christmas.
All right. All right. Kitty, are you going to buy any games that I have not listed?
I don't buy myself games. I receive games as gifts. We'll see what I get for Christmas this year.
All right. Well, Kickstarter. I am now a super backer. I don't know what that means. I think it means I have a problem.
Okay.
So
it's an award that you've got given on the Kickstarter.
The
site.
Kickstarter, yes, sent me an email saying, congratulations, you're now a super backer. Right. I'm like, oh, crap. That's probably not good. So in order to cope with that, I went out and backed 4 or more things. The first one is a Renegade Starship poster map and mini. So there, a guy named Ryan Wolf does a lot of sci-fi starships and miniatures for those. We started playing a game, Savage Worlds, when we were playing Slipstream, and I needed spaceships, and I came across his work. And it has really cool detailed, like 1-inch scale spaceship maps that you can use. And now I just pick it up because it's $30 for a poster map and a miniature, which is totally worth it. And I want to support him in being able to keep doing this.
Right.
So I did that. That's, you know, just a little thing that I did. Orcpub.com is having a Kickstarter right now. So if you play 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, this is a website to help you build characters.
Right.
So this isn't actually a physical game I'm going to get, but I'm like, yeah, I'll throw $20 his way to... Yeah. You know, it, mm-hmm. He has a working copy out there now, but he's trying to get Kickstarter money out there so he can get actual license and get all the content in there.
Right.
But there's a lot of potential there. Mystic Battles Pantheon. This game is...
Mystic or mythic?
Mythic. Mythic is the better word to say because I think that's the right one.
That's the one you typed at least.
Yes, Mythic Battles. So Mythic Battles is a closed right now, but like most of these Kickstarters, when they do close, they often have like post backing so you can still go and get the Kickstarter prices and things like that, pre-order. Right. This one raised $2.6 million.
You're kidding.
If we round it up, it's $2.7 million.
Surely that's got to be like one of the highest Kickstarters ever. Like,
the highest Kickstarter ever is a little over $8 million for Exploding Kittens for games.
Right.
I don't know other Kickstarting projects, right. But for games.
So this is going to be at least in the top 10 of games. Are you talking board games or just all games?
All games. Right. Board games, card games, role-playing games. We'll get to the next thing I kickstarted.
I was going to say, I read ahead in the notes. Hold on a second, Josh. Right.
Yeah. So Mythic Battles is, it's become an Olympic god and fight beside the greatest heroes and monsters to ever live in this beautiful miniature board game. So tons and tons of miniatures. The Kickstarter actually includes a whole bunch of extra miniatures, like three times the miniatures in the retail game. So that's one of the reasons why I do kickstart things is because of all the extra stuff that a lot of times they put these in.
Because you're such a collector, you can't not have all the things.
That's basically it, yeah. But this is you take the role of a particular god, like a Greek god of some sort, and you fight each other, and we'll do a more elaborate review later. But there's a lot. It's a miniatures tactics game,
right?
Is essentially what this is. Now, the next game I kickstarted, and the last one that we'll talk about today, is Kingdom Death. Kingdom Death Monsters 1.5. Now, 1.5 is sort of a misnomer. It's a reprint of Kingdom Death Monsters, which came out about 3 or 4 years ago and did really, really well, and then was unavailable. You couldn't find the base game anywhere. Oh. So he decided to do a revised edition, but just kind of update the components a little bit, add a few more elements to it. But it's essentially completely compatible with the old version. Mm. This game in, I believe, about 2 hours... funded to $4 million.
Whoa.
And it still has 35 days to go, and currently we're at $6.6 million.
You're kidding.
So it has a following.
Wow.
The game already exists, so it's like a proven and tested game.
Yeah.
Basically what this is a world in a box.
Right.
You play with a group of people, and you create characters. Uh-huh. You go on different missions. Once you're done with those missions, you come back to your settlement. So the world is dead. You know, basically, it's a very dark, dark world. Like you're walking on the bones of a deceased world, literally.
Right.
So you come back to the settlement where you have survivors, and you start out with maybe like, you know, half a dozen survivors, and you're trying to build that up, and you're taking these survivors out on different missions to get bones and hide and stuff from these monsters you kill so you can make yourself stronger so you can go out again. And it's this entire campaign world that happens.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot. It's also a hobbyist game to some extent because all the miniatures you need to actually glue together and piece together. But they're very high quality resin miniatures. And there's a lot of extra things you can add to this. So the base game is $250.
Wow.
And there's a lot in the box.
Yeah.
The average Kickstart amount for this game is about $500.
Wow.
And if you want everything in the campaign, I'm scrolling to the bottom here. I think it's $1,900.
Oh my gosh.
No, $1,666.
Wow.
So this will get you everything, all the Kickstarter goals, all the past.
I figure they did the 666 on purpose.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The math just worked out that way.
Yeah.
Before anyone goes too crazy, I backed at the lowest level because I have not played this game, and I know that I wouldn't play this game for the number of years necessary to get almost $2,000 of value out of.
Right.
But it's still worth checking out if that sounds like a kind of game that you would be interested in.
Sure.
So, it's been a fun day with or fun week with Kickstarter. Now, I will not be Kickstarting anything next week. I don't just won't have any time.
Right.
So let's talk about our game of the day real quick. Hero Realms. Another Kickstarter game.
Yes.
I just got it in the mail a couple days ago. I played it with Sydney. We had a really good time. I played it solo. That was actually fun too. And we just played a game just now before we started recording. What did you guys think?
It was fun.
Yeah.
I thought it was a fairly classic deck builder, very straightforward. It had a very D&D feel to the theme.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we play with the character packs.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Got the classic, you know, fighter, thief, wizard, cleric kind of characters.
Yep, and ranger. Those are the five class packs.
That's it.
Yep. In the box, it comes with just generic. They're not heroes. They're just generic starter cards. So the way that if you've ever played Star Realms, it's the same company and very similar system. It's also very similar to Ascension, as a different company, but. Right. A stack of cards, you put those out and you can buy them with gold, and you're trying to attack each other and heal yourself and kill champions. Yeah.
And I thought it was a smart move that you made to do the rule, because there was three of us playing where we had to attack the person to our left only, because as you mentioned at the beginning, there is a tendency, especially with three people, that one person is just going to end up, they got attacked a bit more, and they'll feel like, oh, I got ganged up on.
Right.
And this way, it just felt very like, well, this person has to attack me. Like, and there's no kind of mental math going on about who should I attack now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nobody's feeling like, wait a minute, why did you attack me and not them?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, Kitty, you won, right?
I did win. Oh, yeah. It was really close, though. I had to kill Josh, or Chris was going to kill me that turn.
Yep. Well, and what was interesting is you looked like you were out of it for most of the game. You were like the lowest.
I never felt like I was out of it, though.
Oh, I totally thought, like, oh, she's.
Yeah, you no thought I was out of it, but like I had a long term strategy going. And I think that's like the part about games is even if it looks like you're out of it, if you don't feel like you're out of it, it's still fun.
Yeah.
Even if you are.
Yeah.
And you're just delusional. That's the fun part, is feeling like you're in it.
Yeah, because you were playing the thief, and the thief started at the lowest hit points of the three of us, because I was playing the cleric and Josh was playing the warrior.
Yep.
And I kept seeing your hit points as being low, and I was attacking, and I actually had a decent attack. I thought I had the game in the bag, but and I would have if you had not reread the card.
I would have won so much faster if I could read, it turns out. Because I was giving myself for one of the thieves' things is they have throwing knives. And if you have one, it does one damage. But if you play two, the first one does one damage. And then the next one should do three damage. You get plus two. I was giving myself plus one each time instead of plus two. So
yeah.
I should have been taking Josh down even faster. For a while there, I was just bleeding points. But then I got up a guard and started healing myself.
Yep.
So I just built really fast. I grabbed a lot of cards and didn't spend money on healing.
Yeah. I really like the character packs add a lot to this. So if you pick it up as in the box itself, it's not going to have the different custom characters.
Right.
But the character packs give each player basically two special cards that sit in front of them that give them their personality for that player. And four or five special cards. We were playing with the treasure cards as well.
Mm-hmm.
That give your particular deck personality. It's not, it doesn't start the same as everyone else. So it's that asymmetric feel to it, which I really enjoy. Like, I want to play all the different characters and play in a lot of different combinations.
Mm-hmm.
And the game plays fairly quickly. I mean, we played three players. It was like maybe 45 minutes or so.
Just about.
So, and learning it is a snap.
Yeah.
You know, you get gold so you can buy cards, you get attacks so you can attack people.
Yeah.
And there's champions that sit out in front of you and protect you at times.
Yeah, I mean, I've played only like a handful of deck builder games so far, but this was probably one of the easiest.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Just jump right in and go. This is another one that would actually be pretty good for a school library because it is just, you know, one stack of cards and then you pull out the starting cards for each player.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to put back together. You just put all the cards back in. Ideally, you would separate them before you do that, but you could separate them when you were setting up the game as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
What would you need, like six plastic bags, and then you could just put them away in the bags again?
Yep.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, and the box has like, you know, two sides you can just stack up on.
Right.
So, and this is a small box game, so it's basically a deck of cards that are side by side in the box. I don't know what the retail is, but I want to say it's around $30.
Uh-huh.
So I'll double check. And I think the character packs are probably like $8 or so for the stack of character cards.
Sure.
So, all right. Well, that is about half of our show so far. So let's actually get on topic. Here we go.
In this episode, we're talking about point salad games. Kitty loves them. Takes me about three games to understand the strategy, and Chris is never sure who's going to win. So what attracts us to these kind of games? Let's talk it out. But before we do that, let me take issue with Chris's show notes. Takes me three times to understand the strategy.
You're right. I probably should have put four or five.
Yeah. You are horrible, Chris. You're a horrible person. But I've only played, like I was saying, about, I don't know, maybe less than six deck building games, and maybe only that many actual rounds of a deck building game. So I'm still getting my head into the game. And like,
what about point salad games?
What we're talking about
right now.
I know. But I'm still defending myself from your show notes, Chris. You started this.
Well, this is the point salad strategy he's talking about.
I've played a little bit few more point salad games, and that's actually a good point to start, because it's like understanding the strategy. It can be difficult with point salad games because there's so much to think about. There's so many different elements to. It depends on the game.
Well, let's start with what is a point salad game?
So my definition is you play the game. There's usually some sort of point track you're moving around on, but that's not all you have to do. At the end of the game, if you need a calculator, a piece of paper, a pencil, and like 15 minutes of going, it's probably a point salad game. Because seriously, you have no idea who's winning most of the time. And there's usually, I'd say like 3 to 5 tracks which allow you to earn points towards your total score.
Right.
Yep. So, yeah, I would agree. If there is a final scoring phase at the end of the game, you're probably playing a point salad game. You get, and even when there's a point track, that's just the first thing. That's your base. Mm-hmm. And then whoever controls the most territories gets 2 points per territory. Everyone mm-hmm. who has the most resources, or for each resource you have, or for each score you have. And you go down this list of adding all these points together. And at the end, you have a summary. This is the total points. Who wins? So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about point salad games. And because there's all these different categories, there can be a ton of different strategies. Mm. You don't have to focus in every category. You can focus on individual categories. Right. Like, I'm going to get the most resources at the end, or I'm going to get the most territories, or whatever you happen to be going for. And we'll talk about some specific games, but you know, just kind of to Josh's point, there can be a lot to think about when you're talking about point salad games.
You're just trying to wrap your head around the rules, let alone the different categories of things you could possibly score points in, and then how each one intersects with the other ones, and how you might kind of combine a couple of areas to kind of supercharge your points that you're getting. So it can be confusing that way, in that it's going to take you a while to understand Where am I going to get my most points, and which combinations of rules are going to allow me to like really effectively rack up points?
Yep. So let's go over some quick things that we do like about, well, like a boot. I like about point salad games. Some qualities that are in there. There are non-elimination games. Right. I don't know of any point salad game that you get eliminated from. Mm. So everyone's in for the duration. Mm-hmm. Everyone normally has a chance to win. So even if you're not doing great, or don't think you're doing great, in the end, you're normally still in a relatively close point range. Mm-hmm. That doesn't help when you're still the last, but
sure.
You know, mm-hmm. I lost by 6 points, but you still lost.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. There's oftentimes multiple ways to victory, so you can try different strategies. There's replayability. That's mm-hmm. not for a lot of point salad games early on. There's like solved strategies online for things like Puerto Rico and those kind of games, which were right. kind of started this genre. And I think they tend not to be that, like, that kind of take that game. You're not really mm-hmm. being mean to other players.
I was going
to
say, usually there's very few mechanics even that allow you to mess with other players. It's usually right. very like you take care of what you need to do.
Yeah.
Yep. And it is your game to win or lose based on what your actions are.
Yep. And then based on that, I suppose, there could be a charge leveled at Point Salad Games that it can be a bit insular for that exact reason, because essentially you're building up your strategy and you're executing it and you're not really interacting with the other players that much. So it might be that you might have your head down, thinking a lot, trying to strategize, trying to keep all of these different elements in play and not interacting and talking as much with the other people.
Yep. So let's start talking about some specific ones. Kitty, do you have a favorite?
Favorite one we've played recently, I talked about this in our last one too, I think, is Above and Below.
Okay.
Was a really fun, really fun game.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Above and Below is you're basically hiring adventurers or villagers into your town. Mm-hmm. How many different things? I almost want to get the box now so we can take a look at the scoring.
We already pulled out
there's ways to build buildings, I remember.
Yep.
There's ways to bring people in.
Yep. Hold on just a moment. Let's go find what that score is.
Yeah, we're going to go get the box. We'll be right back.
So through the magic of time travel, we have now teleported the instruction books of these games that we're going to talk about so we could just see the summaries of them.
So Above and Below, at the end, we have our advancement track, and you get points for your buildings. You get points for your reputation. You get card bonuses. Some cards just give you points at the end, which is a fairly common one. Thing, yep. Yeah,
you can just buy victory points during the game. Points.
It's looking like the end of game. Oh, yep. You can get all kinds of.
And then there's a tiebreaker of, like, I think the tiebreaker of the most gold, you know, so if you come up.
Most coins with a tie. If still tied, the player with the most villagers wins. If still tied, the player with the most buildings wins the tie. And they didn't even want to talk about what happens if you're still tied. Yeah. That's the end.
That's pretty common for point salad games, right? Yeah. There's going to be a bunch of tiebreakers that you can go then go down the list through.
Yeah, and when we're playing, if you listen to some of our earlier episodes, when we're talking about Scythe, I think it was Kitty that was talking about the fact that the tiebreaker was what it came down to, and not knowing what the tiebreaker was a problem near the end of the game.
I lost.
Yeah. If I had known what the tiebreaker was, I would have saved some extra gold or resources or whatever to try to break that. One of the things with point salad games is they can be relatively close.
Yeah.
You know, like as far as points concerned, you know, if a good score is like 20 some points.
Yeah.
You're likely all going to be very close to each other.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, oh, look, we both got 25.
Yeah, but I feel like that's part of the whole point salad experience is not being able to calculate who is winning and at what point. Okay, you can probably do it and look around the board and total up everyone's different points in different areas in your head, but it's hard to do, especially when you're playing the game and trying to execute your own strategy.
Yep.
And so you're like, wait, I don't even know if I'm winning or losing. And that goes back to Kitty's point earlier about feeling like you're still in it.
Yep.
And so you have that feeling all the way through to the end, which is great.
It's actually good to not know if you're winning or losing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, some games do better at giving you the illusion that you're still in the game than others.
Yeah.
Like some games you feel like you're completely out of it even when you're not.
Right.
But most of the time, these games make you feel like you have a chance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say that for Spencer, because he's not here right now, is that his biggest thing with point salad games is even when he's not out of it, he just feels like he's not in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so here's the double-edged sword of that problem, is that you can actually feel like you're always out of it, even though that might not have been the case. Even when
you're
not,
yeah. Yep. Like, he almost always comes in like, he's won some that he was convinced that he was like, oh, I'm not going to win this game. I'm not even going to try. And then he like goes around like, doing whatever he wants to, and then he's like, oh my gosh, and like either wins or comes in really close, and you know, it's just that kind of, you gotta always believe in yourself.
Well, a well-designed point salad game, and this might be debatable, but I think allows you to, you really can't make a bad move. Uh-huh. There's no real true optimal move or non-optimal move. Again, this is not true with all games. Some games have been solved, but for the most part, as long as you're moving forward, as long as you're spending your actions doing something, you're going to get something back for that at some point. So another point salad game, which is very popular in general, is Seven Wonders. I'm looking at the end of game scoring for Seven Wonders. And it goes like this. At the end of age 3, once conflict tokens have been handed out, the players total their victory points. Step 1, military conflicts, points from conflict tokens. 2, treasure tokens, victory points for each 3 coins. 3, wonders, points are earned for indicated on the wonders board. 4, civilian structures, you get points for those. 5, commercial structures, points indicated on the card. 6, guilds, points indicated on the card. 7, science structures, which you then actually literally have 1 raised to the power of 2 plus 3 raised to the power of 2 plus 2 raised to the power of 2 equals 14. As an example, science cards are not the easiest thing to score in Seven Wonders.
But every time I've won Seven Wonders, it's because of the science cards.
Yeah, science is important.
It's very important.
Because you get the points squared.
They are so confusing to read that a lot of people just are like, forget it. So if you really build your science, like you really take your time with those cards, that's my pro tip strategy for Seven Wonders.
But Seven Wonders is a great example of during the game, you have an idea of how many points you're getting, but until you add everything up, you don't know. You don't know how you're competing with everyone else, and you can't pay attention to what everyone else is doing and how many points they have.
Yeah.
So you just have to do your own best thing that you can do in that moment.
You're running your own race
against
yourself and the point system.
And I don't know. One of the things I think point salad games need to do better is tell you what a good score is at the beginning.
Yeah.
Scythe actually did a good job with that. In the very beginning, the person with the most points at the end of the game wins. 75 points is a good score.
Right.
You know, so it's like, okay, I have a general idea of how many points I'm aiming towards. So I know that 1 point is going to be, you know, a relatively small percentage of my score, but 5 points is actually worth going after. If the book says 20 points is a good score, well, now 1 point is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know,
I think one of the game mechanics I've noticed a lot is we were talking about this, the just buyable victory points towards your score at the end. And usually they give you a good range. It's like if there's a lot of 1 and 2 victory points that you get, then a lower score is probably what you're going to get. But if you can buy like 7 victory points on a card, you're looking at a really high scoring game.
Right. So we just recently played Terraforming Mars. I don't want to go too far into it because you can listen to our last episode and talking about it. But that is also a point salad game.
Mm-hmm.
And the points you could buy there, to Katie's point, were 1 or 2. Like there were no cards that you could buy victory points that were greater than 2.
Yeah.
And most cards had 0. Mm-hmm. You know, they just didn't have any victory points at all. Mm-hmm. And I think the winning score on that one was like 26 or something like that.
I thought we got close to 30.
Yeah,
maybe. Well, it was less than 30. Nobody hit 30.
Right.
So it's like that was a very low point game, which changes how you play because every point matters. You know, build 1 more greenery gives you 1 point. Build it next to one of your cities, and now that's 2 extra points. That could make the difference in the game.
Yeah.
You know, so you need to kind of know what those points are. Let's see. Oceanos is a game we recently played.
I really liked it because it's cute.
Yep.
It is.
This I think, is like a light point salad game.
Yeah.
This is great for like 8 and up.
Yeah.
Maybe even younger than that.
I don't know about younger than that.
Maybe not.
You don't spend a lot of time with little kids.
It's probably why I like the game so much.
Probably.
Yeah.
You can just wrap your head around it really quickly.
But seriously, like, not joking. 10-year-olds
could pick it up super easy. 8-year-olds, like, if they're a part of a game-playing culture, like, if they don't play any board games, it might be tough for them.
Yep. So, in this game, the game ends at the end of the 3rd round, and each player has completed their return to the surface, performing any final scoring events. Then you get your biggest coral reef. You get a point for each of those. You get points for each of your treasures collected. And then you add in the points from that you've gathered throughout with, you know, your propeller size. It's very light. I think there's only 3 or 4 categories that you're looking for different points in.
Yeah.
But it's still kind of a intro point salad game. You feel like you're in it till the very end.
Yeah.
You can see whether or not your strategy is working or not working as you're playing through. And you can adjust it. You know, and it's a drafting game for your cards, so you can always blame the cards, which is always good to be able to blame randomness for why you didn't do well.
Yep.
I don't know. I remember blaming you pretty much for something. I don't remember what it was, but I remember that was a close game. I think you won, and I think that, like, you took the card that I wanted because I couldn't get a diver to pick up all my treasures or something like
there's
that.
There's a way of picking cards where someone's getting the leftover cards in every round, and that was where it happened.
So, but it's still one of those drafting things. Kitty's looking at me evilly. And the game that is not like Yahtzee, role player. This is not a popular game. I don't know that you could even, I don't know where you would find this game. I found it at a convention. It's actually thunderworksgames.com. That's thunderworksgames.com is who published this. And I bought it from the designer at GameholeCon. Mm-hmm. It is a very fun game. You're basically, well, I think it's a very fun game. You're basically creating role-playing characters, and you get rated on how well you did building those in all of these different sections. So here we have, you get points for following your class card, following your alignment card, following your goal cards, and at the end of the game, you just tally everything up.
Right.
Again, a nice, fun, not like Yahtzee at all. Point salad game.
And was it a little bit like Yahtzee.
And Spencer's going to, when he's listening to this, he's going to be really disappointed that he wasn't here to bring up that in joke that you guys have about how they said it was like Yahtzee and you couldn't stand it. Yeah. But is it good because it's easy to pick up, you know, that sort of thing? Was that how you were feeling?
Did you play it with us?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So this, I thought it was fun just because I like fantasy role-playing characters and building characters.
It's a lot. It was not one of my favorite ones of these games. First of all, because I feel like there wasn't a lot of story to it. Something I like about the point salad games is that they usually have Above and Below is great for this because it has like a whole story book, which is kind of to the point you were saying earlier is like these games can be kind of insular, but Above and Below, you get like everyone reads their story out loud and you get like, I guess somebody else reads it to you because there's like spoilers in the story. Yeah. So you get to make decisions based on that. And everyone's kind of listening because they're fun little things to listen to.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
If you're able to hear dogs.
I was going to say, it sounds like not, a pound.
Yeah, this is not Kitty's dog.
No, the dog. Well, I think it might also be my dog at this point. There's a saw going on next door, which is upsetting every single dog in the neighborhood, I think.
So anyway.
They're all howling back at each other.
But yeah, so there's themes that are on top. Point salad is a type of game. Yep. The themes could be just about anything. And Above and Below is also adds that storytelling theme in there as well.
Oh, I was talking about role player though. Yeah. So you are just creating your character, and I think that one was very, very insular. It was very much you're looking at your board.
Right.
And really the only reason you're looking at other people is to make sure they're not cheating.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the big reason you're watching other people
there's
play.
There's not a lot of interaction between what you're doing. There's drafting of dice. That seems to be a fairly common theme in the games we're talking about. There's drafting and everything. But there's even an Above and Below, you're kind of drafting villagers.
I guess you are.
It's an action, but you're picking the villagers in the order, whoever gets them first.
Yeah.
But there's drafting of dice. So the start player rotates around the table and that person will roll a handful of dice based on the number of players, and they put them in, they don't even get to have much choice in this. They put them in numeric order. When two dice are tied, they can change the color, the color order they can choose. And then each one of those dice, the lowest ones are cheaper, the highest ones are more expensive. There are pros and cons to having the highest and the lowest.
Right.
But mostly you want high dice.
Right.
And then as the initiative player, you get to pick the first die, and then the next person goes, the next person goes, next person goes. So that's about the only interaction there.
Right.
But I still like, it has good components. There's, big thick boards that you're putting dice in slots, and it all ends with like three dice in every category.
I don't know. I had a hard time. I thought that one was one where I had a hard time picking up what strategies were going to be more important than others. Right. I think I focused on some that were not as great. The die totals, like the numbers that you hit give you points. I think I just didn't get enough of those, like the attribute skill level.
And that's the thing I personally find the hardest about point salad games is that what you were just saying there about thinking where can I kind of focus my energies on just a few things that are going to reward me the most. And I like, my mind just works this way. I like to know every option I have at any given moment, which leads to that analysis paralysis moment. And point salads can really trigger that in me because there's so much I can consider that I just want to consider all the options because I have that maximizer mentality of I need to know what I could do so that I can pick the best move in this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the things that role player does do that other point salads can do mm-hmm. too is give you the feeling that you can follow every strategy.
Right.
Like you want to do a perfect strategy.
Yeah.
And point salad games, it's almost never possible to do that.
Yeah.
That one was really tough for me because you can't do all the strategies, but it felt like you could.
Right.
And it was just like at the end, I was like, I tried to do all of them and I didn't do any of them.
That's exactly how I would feel.
Yeah. So there's some trickiness to figuring mm-hmm. out like what are the uh-huh. important things, and you want your game to let you go down a particular strategy and feel comfortable doing that and ignore other strategies.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What I really love are the interconnected strategies where terraforming Mars was really good for this, where if you get a couple cities up there and then you really build up your plant making, you can build all of the green squares around your cities and give yourself lots of points. And a lot of the cards you can kind of like build on your, like once you have something going, you can kind of build that same.
So it's like kind of like an engine, like two things go together so well that they kind of reinforce mm-hmm. each other.
Yep.
Like Sydney had her puppy engine going where she
Fun.
She got puppies and they were one of the animals, but they were unstealable. That's like one of the only interaction things you have in terraforming Mars. So she had these unstealable animals, and every time anyone placed a city, she got them. So she really focused on building cities after she got that puppy card because she got like double points basically for everything she built.
And there's a reward on that board for having the most cities as well. She had to do something special to trigger it, and she didn't. But you can see
I
again.
Thought she was going
to
do it, and she thought I was going to do it. We were both really close to it, and neither of us wanted to pay the coin. We let it get too late and we didn't want to pay the coins.
But that's the idea, is that those three elements could all stack together to create this mm-hmm. engine, as people like to call it in the
Well, and that was another situation where I'm not sure, because she wasn't building any resources, so she felt like maybe she wasn't mm-hmm. in it. Like every round, she's like, I still don't have any resources. But because she was following this one strategy very hardcore, like full mm-hmm. all in, she ended up winning the game.
Yeah.
You know, because it just goes
it
to show.
It came down to like a 1 point spread between.
Actually, it was tied and she won on gold.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So,
again.
Yep.
I always feel like I lose the tie. I don't know what it is.
But it's like, I mean, we have a few minutes left, but I kind of want to go through like mm-hmm. generic strategies that we, you know, can apply to basically any point strategy game.
Yeah.
And I think that's one really good one is, pick one or two things and just focus on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry about everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
The goal is to get the most points. And if you have an engine that's getting you points, you're still going to get points at the mm-hmm. end of the game.
Yeah.
You know, what do you guys think is like something that's kind of a generic strategy that would work for most of these games?
It's exactly what you were talking about. But I think for me, it's just following that a bit more religiously and maybe doing a bit more work at the beginning to understand the game. If you want to be really good at these games, just like understand them before you play them. Because for me, it's always taking me one or two plays, like you said in the intro, one or two, Chris, not three, to understand exactly how I can build an engine and which engine might be the better one versus some other not so good ones. So it's just you got to understand the game a bit, and then you can build that engine. Yeah. I think.
Well, I would say it's not necessarily bad engines versus good engines.
Sure,
if it's a good game, any engine can work, mm-hmm. but it's engines that match your play style.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the important part.
Also, look at what you're starting with. Don't try to... So, like, I've seen people get kind of trapped in this before of, last time I won because I had the biggest coral reef, so I'm going to really focus on that. But if you're not pulling coral reef cards, you're really going to kind of cripple yourself there. You're not going to win if you're not, you know, pulling the cards that you were really looking for.
Yeah.
You should really look at what you have and how you maximize what you got. Use what you got. Don't try to corner yourself into, well, I read online that this was the best strategy, so I'm going to make this my strategy.
Yep.
I think you get caught up in that sometimes. Definitely. Like, which one is the best strategy? Yep. Whereas I'm just like, all right, I've got a lot of these cards, so this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
Yeah, well, and different games will have that different things. Like even Terraforming Mars, where you have a handful of cards, that's going to start what your strategy, like what mm-hmm. you're going to go for.
Yeah.
And you just have to embrace that and work towards that.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, what Kitty said is absolutely right. Don't assume you can go in with one strategy.
Yeah.
Some games you can't. Some games aren't, mm-hmm. don't have any random elements to it, so you're like, I play this strategy.
Yeah. Sure.
But those are the ones, like the Puerto Rico games, where everyone starts in the same way.
Uh-huh.
There's really not a lot of randomness in what happens.
Sure.
But so you can play a very specific strategy, and the first person of that strategy wins.
Yeah.
I think that's why more modern point salad games build in some randomness, so mm-hmm. that you can't just say the game is, this is how you play it, yeah. this is what you do.
Because you were talking those solved games like yeah. Puerto Rico. Yeah. That means there is just a good strategy.
There's just
right?
a good strategy. Okay. Do this, mm-hmm. do this, do this. And if right. you don't, you're not going to win if someone else is following that ideal okay. strategy.
Go yeah. So. So these are my favorite kinds of games, I think.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I really like them,
because as Chris has pointed out, I tend to kind of feel like I'm victimized, and you can't victimize someone in these games, right. really. Like, there are some mechanics where, like, yeah, you can steal, like, a couple points here and there, but usually, yeah. like, it doesn't come down to those points, and it's still fun, and, like, yeah. it's just, like, it's you doing your thing with yeah. other people, having fun, discussing, and I like to learn from other people's strategies, watch what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. A lot of times I'll watch Chris play a couple times, and then I know how to beat him.
Nice. I need to learn from this.
Well, even like Scythe. Scythe is a game where it's area control, and you mm-hmm. have, you know, you have mechs walking around and farmers, and you can steal resources and stuff. It's clearly a point salad game at the end.
Yeah.
But it's still not all that interactive competitive during the game, even mm-hmm. though the game allows for it.
Yeah.
So even, we attacked my farmers. My farmers get sent back to the home base, and I get a reward for that. I get points mm-hmm. when you do that.
Yeah.
You know, so it tends to balance out where you don't feel like, you know, you're being attacked or you have no chance just because something bad happened.
Isn't right. there one strategy where, like, I don't remember who it was, but they kept getting... They, like, almost won because everyone kept attacking them.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah. we were like, we have to stop attacking.
I think that was you.
Was it me?
Yeah,
I thought it might have been me.
Had,
I can't remember.
Yeah, you had the faction where you didn't get a limit on the number of stars you could earn.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Based on combat.
Uh-huh.
So when people attacked you, you're like, oh, yeah, attack me. Oh, I get another point. Oh, I get another yep. point. Oh, I get another point.
Right. Uh-huh.
Which I think ended up winning you the game.
I don't remember if I won yeah. or not.
I think you did, because I think you stole the victory from me, because you
no wonder he remembers.
Won too many attacks.
Uh-huh.
So, and the one other thing I'll say about point salad games, if you're going into it, like I say, know the score ranges. That's important. And then, finally, don't try to do everything. Pick a few mm-hmm. things and specialize. I think that's kind of the most important things to do there.
You try to do everything, you're going to end up doing nothing and feel... That's, I think, where you feel like the failure.
Yep.
But if you feel like you've got a couple things where you're like, yeah, I'm getting all these points, you're doing good.
Yeah. And finally, before I pass this off to Josh to read us out, I do want to make a comment on next week's show topic.
Uh-huh.
So as I say, I'm going to London.
Oh, I didn't even look.
So next week's show topic is board games on phones and tablets. Which is very topical, because I'm going to be on an airplane, I'll be traveling around, you can't right. carry a bunch of games with you.
Sure.
But I have probably 20 different board games on my iPad.
Right.
And most of those can also be played on your tablet. We talked about Kitty playing Pandemic on her phone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, it's a very topical thing, and I'll have a lot of research for this one
mm-hmm.
for sure.
next week. So on that note, Josh, take us out.
Sure. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with your comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. And remember, until December 18th, this will enter you into our holiday contest as well. You can also reach us directly on Twitter at tabletopgametlk. And I'm at Josh's Blonde. Chris is at Game Master Chris. And Kitty is at Kitten L. And if you like what you hear, help us spread the word by liking us on Facebook and Twitter, and even better, share or retweet our posts. Until next week, when we talk about board games on phones and tablets, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.